are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Tuesday, March 5th, 2019. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Paul Keel, reporter with ProPublica, on how the IRS was gutted. Also on the program today, Clinton, Merkley, they've dropped out of the 2020 sweepstakes. I'm not sure either was ever in, but they've announced that they're out. Meanwhile, NSA announces it's shutting a program down that has been analyzing your calls and texts for the past decade or so. Israel defenders are pretending Ilhan Omar is the problem, while Representative Steve King has been consistently promoting white nationalists, unabated. Democrats in the Senate look to go on the offense on climate change. Some right-wing counties are promoting pro-gun ownership, sanctuary cities for homosexuals, and up to 30,000 ex-felons in Louisiana are getting their vote back. Meanwhile, in the House and the Senate, Democrats look to pass a financial transaction tax. Scientists report a second person with HIV is reportedly cured. And lastly, bad news, folks. Trump's nomination for the Nobel Peace Prize appears to have been forged again. All this and more on today's program.
I would just like,
yeah,
I would like to just talk about the Nobel Peace Prize all day.
You're using that button
for that. Hey. Oh, I
see. Yeah. There you go. So Donald Trump, apparently somebody forged it. We don't know who it could be. It could have just been a fan of Donald Trump's that forged it. A fan.
Possible.
But it's very strange. But
400-pound guy on a
pretty bed. Pretty disappointing. Pretty disappointing, I can tell you, because I was really looking forward to the to him not winning with a legitimate entry, but not happening. Everybody's a little bit under the weather. Jamie is back. Little worse for the wear, as it were.
My body is dying, but my heart is full.
There you go. That's the important thing. Meanwhile, Jesse Waters is really on the case, has figured out that, we're going to talk a little bit about Ilhan Omar today because it's fascinating to me the amount of concern over Ilhan Omar's, comments, which, you really have to take in the worst light to presume they are anti-Semitic at all. And it is as if there has been a complete mobilization of our government out of concerns of what Ilhan Omar is doing when we have a record number of white nationalist extremists actually killing people in this country. But yet, there's no room for this conversation because of Ilhan Omar. But
well, then can I just also add, I mean, not only that, but let's put a fine point on it. I mean, they're actually putting a target on her back.
Oh,
by
yeah.
How they're demonizing her and lying about her and exploiting racism and Islamophobia. So they're not only being mind blowing.
Well, we will talk about that. In
yeah,
a bit.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, we'll
I'm just
get
so
there.
Disgusted, but yes.
And so much of this is a means in which to distract from obviously the problem of the Trump administration and the racism, bigotry, and anti-Semitism that it is promoting across the country. It is a shame that Democrats are participating in this. We can talk about that more. But in the meantime, this is allowing for this this meme on the right. It's super important for them to push this. Everybody's on the same page. Even our friend Brandon Strachan at the CPAC was calling the Democrats the party of hate. And here is the Ingram angle. Laura Ingram, noted promoter of hate in myriad of different fashions.
Hand gesture enthusiast. Right. Waters is sitting in for her today.
She got her start by outing people in college who were gay because, you know, it's against the law at Dartmouth, apparently, to not be subject to homophobia in that era. And so she was just fulfilling her civic duty as a student at Dartmouth. But nevertheless, she let Jesse Waters fill in for her on the Ingram angle. That is a perfect fit, if you ask me. And here is the argument that Democrats have forced Donald Trump to be a racist.
All right,
Dan,
you know what?
And Starr have just told everybody that Donald Trump has never said a racist thing in 3 years. These two people have just said that. Do you believe them?
All right, closed. Listen, Jesse, Dan, I'll give you 30 seconds to respond. Go ahead.
Okay, Leo's clearly insane. I don't know how he managed to bypass the Booker. This guy's out of his mind. I'm sorry. But Donald Trump, there has never been an allegation that Donald Trump was a racist until he ran for president as a Republican. Leo is nuts. He's race baiting people on the show. He has no evidence of anything he's saying being true. And he just lied to the audience saying that Muslims are banned from the United States. I was unaware of that. Because if you're Muslim, you're allowed in the United States like anyone else. He's making that up to bait me and Star into a debate because he has no facts, because he's been vaccinated against facts at an early age like every other liberal. All he has is this garbage nonsense that Donald Trump is a racist. It's disgusting. It's disgraceful. He should be embarrassed for saying it.
All right.
Yeah, you know, it's like, what possible evidence could you have that Donald Trump is a racist? I mean, are we supposed to have some type of affidavit or some type of consent decree from the Department of Justice? Oh, wait, here's one. This is actually a consent decree filed by the United States District Court, Eastern District of New York, United States of America. That would be the country against Fred C. Trump and Donald Trump and the entire Trump Management, Inc., because they were... they were literally breaking the Fair Housing Act by keeping black people out of their apartments and their rentals. And this is actually only one of two consent decrees because they blew through the first one. Then, of course, I suppose you need to actually exercise even the slightest bit of imagination when Donald Trump took out a full page ad. In the New York Times,
paid for it,
and actually paid for it, supposedly, saying the death penalty should be brought back, and our police should be brought back because of the wilding that was taking place by black people in Central Park, the Central Park Five. They should be killed, and oh, they turned out to be completely innocent. But put up the apology that he put up there. Right, which apology? There was none.
Yeah, none for promoting the deaths of five innocent teenagers.
There is evidence from the Department of Justice, and there is just evidence that is in print because of the massive expenditure that Donald Trump wanted to expend based upon his own racism.
I have another one if we want to go into it.
Sure.
A book by John O'Donnell, former president of Trump Plaza Hotel and Casino in Atlantic City, quoted Trump's criticism of a black accountant, quote, "Black guys counting my money, I hate it. The only kind of people I want counting my money are short guys that wear yarmulkes every day." And Trump at first denied the remarks, but later said in a 1997 Playboy interview that the stuff O'Donnell wrote about me was probably true.
Yeah. And then, of course, we just had testimony from sworn testimony from Michael Cohen of numerous things that Donald Trump had said that were racist when Barack Obama was president, which I believe was before Donald Trump was a Republican.
That took
president.
A lot out of me when he was president.
Yeah, the whole birth thing.
It was the whole birth so thing. Was it was just a lot for me yet? Emotionally.
Except for all that evidence, there is no evidence. Which is probably more evidence that you would get from, like, the vast majority of racists in the country.
I got the paper trail.
Pretty impressive stuff. Dan Bongino walked right into that.
Those are probably all comments that Mark Meadows does not consider to be racist.
Right. I would imagine. Folks, we all want to do the right thing to keep our bodies healthy in the long run. But even if we eat kale salads and drink green smoothies, we're likely not getting all of the essential nutrients we need on a daily basis. Enter Ritual, the obsessively researched vitamin for women. Two easy-to-take capsules provide 9 nutrients you need to support a strong foundation for your health, from D3 to omega-3. Plus, their no-nausea capsule is designed to be gentle on an empty stomach, and there's a mint tab in every bottle to keep things fresh so you don't get that fishy aftertaste. A subscription is easy to start, and it's easy to snooze. Just $1 a day to have all the essential nutrients your body needs delivered every month. No strings attached. I didn't take these because I'm not a woman, but a friend of the show reports... Arguably. A friend of the show reports that, they love the fact that all the nutrients that are in the 9 nutrients that are in the Ritual are sourced. They tell you where they come from, which is a big deal, I guess, for people who are interested in where they're getting their stuff, because there are some sources of this stuff that aren't particularly healthy. Furthermore, they love the fact that they don't have to buy it. She writes, every time I start a vitamin regimen, I am great through the first bottle, and then I forget. Ritual sends the bottles to your home. And you can never forget to continue to take your vitamins. Better health does not happen overnight. Help fill the gaps in your diet with Essential for Women, a small step that helps support a healthy foundation for your body. Visit ritual.com/majority to start your ritual today. That's ritual.com/majority. That's why it just hit me. You want to make sure you make a habit of it. They could have called it habit, but no, who's been that interested in habit? But
ritual has better connotations than habit.
I was actually just reading one of the stuff in there is both boron and magnesium, and there was a big study that was out recently about magnesium and bone health when you get older. Like I'm convinced I'm on that. And then apparently you need the boron and the vitamin D3 so that the magnesium is absorbed. But I'm not a doctor. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk to Paul Keel about how the IRS was gutted. We'll be right back. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. Pleasure to welcome to the program Paul Keel. He covers business and taxation over at ProPublica. Paul, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
So this piece, there's a lot of talk, obviously, right now about taxation in the context of MMT, and as Democrats talk about proposals for Medicare for all and universal health, child care, baby bonds, et cetera, how are we going to pay for this? At the end of the day, it really doesn't matter how much you tax if you don't collect. And that's becoming a bit of a problem, isn't it?
Yeah, so I think it's probably best to start out with in terms of like where we are and how we got here. And really starts with the Republican Congress coming in 2011 after those big midterms in 2010. And they start attacking the budget across the government, but there's a special, you know, emphasis on cutting the IRS budget. And early on, it really has a lot to do with the Affordable Care Act, and that's because the IRS had a major role in implementing the ACA. And so going after the IRS was seen as a way of sort of kneecapping the ACA, which obviously they weren't able to do through straight-up legislation. So the budget cutting starts immediately as soon as the House Republicans get in there. And then 2013 comes, and there's this big scandal around, you know, their policing of political nonprofits, the Lois Lerner scandal, without getting too far down that rabbit hole. Like, you know, the bottom line is that was something that became a really big Republican issue, seen as, you know, you heard a lot this idea of the Obama IRS, the Obama, you know, IRS that's going after right-leaning nonprofits, using the government as an instrument of, you know, Democratic politics. And that became a larger justification for slashing the budget. And so it went, there was a major cut in 2013. There's another big one in 2015 as this sort of scandal kind of kept on going. And so what we wanted to do in our piece is sort of step back and say, what is the cumulative effect of all this? And the cumulative effect is that the budget is down something like $2.5 billion in today's dollars from 2010, which is its peak. They've lost a third of their enforcement staff.
A third of their enforcement staff.
Right. So, you know, I talk to a lot of people at the IRS, and they're all like, basically, you know, you start out, you're at a cubicle that has four people, and then there's three people, and then there's two people. That's basically what's happening across the IRS. So what happens, that, you know, they can't be good, what happens? And so we wanted to do is kind of put all these numbers together. What has the cumulative effect been? And so audits are down 40%. We wanted to show that there's dollar, you know, hit in terms of what's being collected. You know, the government is taking in, our number was $18 billion less a year.
Okay.
And just directly from the audits that are not being done, the collection actions that are not being taken, that's what the effect that we were able to look at for year by year, which we say cumulatively since 2010, we run into about almost $100 billion that's been lost because the IRS is a shell of its former self.
All right. No, wait a second. I want to stop here because I think we need to sort of marinate in this just a little bit.
Yeah,
and then I want to go back, you know, a little bit to the 90s, because I was a little bit surprised to read that sort of the IRS recovered during the Bush years. But when we talk about $18 billion annually, right? I mean, this is not a huge amount in the context of the U.S. budget, but there was just reported Warren came out with a universal daycare program that, according to Moody's, would cost $1.7 billion over the course of a decade. So when we talk about $18 billion annually, really the Warren plan could be funded for 10 years, essentially, with 1 month of the IRS being its former self in terms of their enforcement mechanism. That's,
yeah, I mean, these numbers
nuts.
Are crazy. I mean, when we were reporting the story, we would like sort of psych ourselves out because, like, the context is, you know, the IRS takes in about $3 trillion a year in taxes in terms of everything that goes in the IRS. And so you're like, we have these conversations like $18 billion, that's not that much. You know, like, would you really kind of step back and, like, you know, these are enormous numbers. And I should say the $18 billion is, like, just directly from audits that are not being done. The much larger question is, how much worse has cheating gotten? How many more people are
right.
cheating? The scope of cheating, we don't know that. And that's going to be a much larger number where this is just going to be kind of a decimal compared to that. But I mean, if you just figure, as we say in the piece, I mean, these numbers get very silly very quickly in terms of how large they are.
On that point, did you, as in the course of your reporting, did you come across, and I don't know if you spoke to accountants, and I don't know, I wouldn't imagine necessarily that, like, you know, the my accountant, no offense, but I would imagine that, like, high level accountants, they must be aware of this, right? Like, they don't need ProPublica to do this report, because they probably have enough clients where they can just basically anecdotally say things have changed, and so I'm not going to worry about X or Y or Z in this instance, because I know there's not that much scrutiny. I mean, do you have a sense that that's happening out there? Or is there any way to quantify that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, some of the most alarmed quotes we got for people on the other side, the most egregious examples are people who help people who have major tax debts. So that's like, they're not trying to hide the tax. They actually owe the IRS, but they didn't pay. And now the IRS is not coming after them. And, you know, I'd say it's like a six-figure tax debt, and then the IRS just lets it expire. Something's wrong there, obviously. accountants know that, you know, this didn't get audited last time. Yeah, why don't you go ahead, you know, and try that. And there's research that shows people who are audited, you know, pay more tax in future years. Like, it's not even a question. The question is how much, how big the effect is. The point we make is, even if there's just been a tiny bit of increase in cheating, which I would, that's a very conservative assumption. I think it's probably not true. You get quickly into the tens of billions, and you get into 100 billions very quickly in terms of how much revenue is being lost. The problem is the economy's been doing pretty well, or it's been growing since 2010, which was the depth of recession. So tax revenue has been rising, but that's just a reflection of the economy being getting bigger. We don't know how much extra tax revenue we've lost as a reflection fact that people just aren't paying the taxes that they owe.
So, all right, let's do a little history for us here. And I will say that, you know, there have been some who have likened the abolish ICE, movement, if you will, to what the Republicans have done in terms of the IRS. By hammering away at abolishing the IRS, no one was like, we're going to abolish the IRS, but it apparently made it much easier to shrink it down to the size of, I mean, the idea that there's nearly half the enforcement mechanism that there was 10 years ago is just nuts. But walk us through, when did this start? It started during the Gingrich era.
Right, yeah, that's the first time that I think, you know, we identified as kind of, even back to Reagan, there's sort of this notion that everyone could agree on that, you know, yeah, we got to collect taxes, we got to fund the government. It was a conservative argument we made for that, and that if you want to cut taxes, you need to know that what the taxes you're cutting on paper is actually what's going to happen, as opposed to what we have now, where you just don't know in terms of how much tax people are really paying. Gingrich comes in, and really there's these Senate hearings in 97 and 98 that they have. There's very dramatic sort of hearings with people behind, like, a black curtain, you know, from the former IRS employees, you know, talking about that. And, you know, abuses of the IRS, a lot of it focused on around collections, but then this reform bill comes up and it passes almost unanimously in the Senate. Clinton signs it. And it had a major effect in terms of how much revenue the IRS was able to collect in the following years, because basically it reorganized the entire agency. So it was a major revenue hit from that. I don't think that was quite realized at the time. But like you mentioned, if you look at the numbers in terms of how much audits the IRS was doing, how much revenue it was bringing in terms of what you would expect in enforcement revenue, it really does increase starting about 2002, so like 3-4 years after this big reform bill is passed. It does recover. Those numbers do recover, particularly when Democrats get into power, the midterm elections in 2006. The budget goes way up, so that the peak is 2010 when you have, you know, unified control of Congress and the presidency under Democrats. So Democrats did increase the IRS budget quite a bit, and you saw that in the numbers. There were returns on that, and that's sort of the common sense case for funding the IRS. It's like one of the very few areas of government where if you give them more money, they will give you even more money back.
Right. I mean, that is, let's just make everybody should be very clear about this. There is absolutely zero debate in terms of the return on investment on what you put into the IRS. It necessarily gives you whatever you put in. If you fund them X, you will get X plus. Maybe it's plus one, maybe it's plus two, maybe it's plus five, maybe it's plus 10. And just to go back to that Gingrich era, so if people remember, there was all these sort of like dramatic testimony, you know, that people were afraid that they couldn't show their face because they were blowing the whistle on this. And this was also during an era where there was like a heightened amount of anti-government, you know, which every time we have a Democrat in office, we seem to get on some level, right? This anti-federal government sentiment. And then after these reforms are passed and signed by Clinton, the inspector general comes out and says, yeah, no, none of that was true, right?
Yeah, so the GAO did reports and kind of went through and looked at the accusations, and a lot of it, was not true. It was vastly overstated. But nevertheless, you know, the reform bill was passed too late, right?
And so during the Bush years, and particularly during the late stages of the Bush years, when the Democrats take control of the House, they re-up the IRS budget, and then obviously tax receipts increase. And since you walked us through, it was basically since the Republicans took control of the Congress again in 2010 that things have sunk. Well, here's the question though: is there a material difference in the destruction of and the assault on the IRS in this era, right, starting in this period in which the Republicans controlled the budget process with the IRS versus the first one? So, in other words, is there a more or less capacity for the IRS to bounce back as an agency?
Yeah, so I'd say much, much less. And the reason is that what happened back then is, like, you basically reorganized everyone. You had a whole lot more requirements and processes they had to follow, so a lot of retraining had to happen. That slowed everything down. But everybody was still there, right? So once they learned that stuff, once they knew who to repeat to, or they knew the new rules they had to follow, they could get back to it. Whereas now, those people are gone. What's been happening is there was never, like, a dramatic day where people were laid off en masse. People have been retiring and have not been replaced. So that's what's been happening across the government. So, and they've been cutting back on training. They've been cutting back on travel. So not only are there vastly fewer people there, the training has gotten worse. And talking to a lot of IRS people, the big concern is, like, there's no one there to train the new people. So even if you were to turn around tomorrow and say, like, we're going to give you $1 billion more, it takes time to hire those people, and they're not going to be the same people that left. And as I think we'll get to in this conversation, the people who've left that are most valuable are these people who are doing the complicated audits, which is the people that, auditing corporations, auditing, the billionaires, trying to sort through that. It's extraordinarily complicated and complex. They're investigators, and they're gone. And you can't get back that experience overnight.
So we don't have that institutional knowledge. And I would also imagine that the multiple government shutdowns have also made it a fairly toxic place for people to work. And this is all presuming that the Democrats in the House are going to up the IRS budget. Address the first part before you address the second part of that in terms of...
Yeah, no, there was a...
Go ahead.
There was, I think, Indeed, one of these job search sites was, like, sharing something and showing that, government employees were searching for jobs in higher numbers, and IRS was by far the highest that I saw, I believe, and people are like, I mean, having talked to IRS employees, they think of themselves as public servants. That's more or less the ethos. A lot of people can be making a lot more money outside the IRS, the ones who are talented. And so there's already kind of an aspect of personal sacrifice for the people to be working for the IRS, but they usually believe in the mission. But now you lay them off basically shut them down for a month. They don't know they're gonna be able to pay their mortgage. Like, the costs start to outweigh the benefits for some people, and they look to leave. That's definitely not going to help. In terms of the budget coming back, so this year the Democrats cut that deal with Trump to get the government back open, and it's actually constituted another cut for the IRS. So that didn't happen. So now we're talking about 2020 fiscal year 2020, which, you know, would start like this, I guess, October. But, you know, that we're talking about next year, maybe the budget is going to bounce back up. But there was some openness from Republicans that we talked to on the Hill on background that basically saying Trump has got his guy in the IRS now. And if he comes out and says, we, you know, we need a lot more money, then maybe the Republicans would come around and support a budget increase. But that hasn't happened yet. And there's some reason to be skeptical that's ever going to happen.
So walk us through. OK, so and just lastly. All right. We reduce the enforcement mechanisms of the IRS by 40%. What in a qualitative way, what does that mean? In other words, who's. What enforcement mechanisms are gone? Are they taking it out of the, they're no longer looking at, you know, low income people as to whether they're cheating because they're low income. And if they cheat 10% and they're only paying, you know, $10,000, then, you know, why go after $1,000, right? I mean, is that, or let me ask you that and also ask, Is it just a question of like the cheating is the same and the difficulty to find it is the same, but you might as well go after the big dollar folks because there's more money to be found there? How does that work?
Yeah. So I think the simplest way to think about it as I worked on this over time is basically if you are middle income or down for the most part, you're audited by a computer. So they just run your W-2 through there and other stuff, and it's very hard for a wage earner to hide income from the government. All the studies that have been done about this show that the people who are hiding income are people who own their own business, because a lot of that stuff is not separately reported to the government, and people who have like passed through, you know, like partnerships and LLCs and that kind of stuff. So that's who would benefit the most in terms of audit rate going way down, because that sort of stuff is not going to be caught by a computer. It doesn't know how much your business is making. So those are the audits that are not being done because it's, you know, the skilled auditors, someone has to go through your stuff. You have to be flagged for audit, and then they have to start going through your stuff to find that kind of evasion. And there's studies that have shown this, that compliance of people who get a W-2 is like 99%. And the big area where there's basically cheating happens is hiding income. So, yeah. And that's what the audits make a big impact on that.
And so
Which I would point, yeah, I would just say that's sort of a built-in, I guess I say regressivity of tax administration. In other words, like it's much easier to catch, like, you know, the bottom 85% of taxpayers than it is the top 15%. And that's what you really need the bigger resources for in terms of just headcount of people, trained personnel.
And the fact of the matter is, though, for every dollar you spend there, you're going to get back how much?
So the general overall like ROI that often is cited is 4-to-1. But I think that's like way too low because it's basically like all the money that you put into the IRS that includes like everything, right? But if you were narrowly to target to enforcement, you know, I've seen them make estimates of 10-to-1 on some things.
Wow.
And then, you know, I mean, I've talked to IRS people who are working on audits that have hundreds of millions of dollars that are at issue. It's like almost impossible to count the ROI on those cases. You know, someone who's making $120,000 a year and is going to come out with an audit that results in tens of millions of dollars in tax owed. So sometimes it's just off the charts in terms of what comes back.
All right. Well, it's fascinating stuff, and it doesn't seem like it's going to I mean, it's not going to be till 2020, and I would imagine every year or two that goes by with less and less. Institutional knowledge is that much worse, right?
Yeah, no, it's going to get worse before it gets better. But I mean, it would be a really big deal for that process to turn around and for it to start to rebuild itself. But that is something that I think definitely has to happen if you're looking at, you know, these big, you know, tax proposals that you mentioned are being put forward. I mean, I guess the good news, to the extent there is any good news, is that a lot of this is easy money in terms of it's an easy solution, right? It's like there's no there's no downside to it funding the IRS. So that's something that, you know, a Democratic administration, if there is one in 2021, could look forward to in terms of increased revenue.
Paul Keel, ProPublica, we will put a link to your piece at majority.fm. Thanks so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks.
Nuts. You could pay for Elizabeth Warren's child health care, child daycare program in January of the year that you reconstituted the for 10 years. January in when you reconstituted the IRS. That is shocking to me. We don't have the money for it, though.
Can't. How are you going to pay for it?
That's a great idea, but how do you afford it? Just heard people don't pay taxes anymore.
Doing a tax jubilee. Before we go into the fun half, this was pretty disturbing to find out how hypocritical Bernie is. And I have to admit, it was that much more painful to hear it from Sean Hannity, because I'm not a fan of Hannity's, but the idea that he's going to catch Bernie in this way is really upsetting.
It's scary, the type of reporting resources they're throwing at Bernie.
It's nuts. They blew this story wide open. And the thing is, I was at this rally, and I didn't even pick up on this. Here's Sean Hannity breaking this story wide open.
All right, time for Hannity Watch, our investigation into the 2020 candidates this weekend.
Pause it for 1 second. This is a serious investigation into the candidates, 2020. It's, what did he call it? It's Hannity Watch.
All right, time for Hannity Watch, our investigation into the 2020 candidates this weekend. Senator Bernie Sanders kicked off his 2020 campaign in Brooklyn, wasted a little time before revealing, well, more hypocrisy. Democratic socialist, open borders advocate, held a rally and was happy to greet his supporters from behind a barrier. Why is the fence up, Bernie? Oh, are barriers acceptable if they protect you personally? They're only wrong if they're used to protect our border and the American people, just like how many celebrities in Hollywood and politicians have armed security guards.
Wow. It's almost too hard to come up with like a an analogy to make fun of this. It's almost too hard. It's so dumb.
No, it's, but I mean, here's, it's so hard because it got us dead to rights.
First off, the amount of investigatory resources that Hannity's bringing to bear is intimidating.
It does make $27 million a year.
Yes, aside from the fact that Bernie is not open borders. Let's assume for a moment he was. I have this to report. I also had my I-team, the Majority Report I-team, was there. And within hours of erecting those massive steel slats, they were taken down. So I guess what Bernie really believes in is just putting up a border fence for a short period of time and then taking them down.
If the security at Saturday's event is any indication of Bernie's border policy, we have a very humane policy shift coming up.
Yeah, there was it was pretty laid back.
It was humane to the point of like, you know, guys, this isn't just like a fish revival show anymore. Like,
yeah,
this
exactly.
Is the front runner.
He's running for president.
This is a real thing.
I was
check stuff out a little bit.
I was a little bit like looking around, like going, like, I don't even see any cops here.
I didn't
like
see, there was like a, I didn't see
no
campus
cops.
Security.
No yeah. Cops here.
I smell swine. Reset the event.
But honestly, do you think, I mean, just like, I'm trying to piece this together where Hannity is like, is there a producer who does this? Or does Hannity go like,
I think,
oh,
it's pretty simple. Let me ask you a question.
We've got
Sam.
A Bernie.
Do you lock your door to your apartment?
Exactly.
Do you lock the door to your
what's
apartment?
What's that behind you? A wall?
Yeah. Do you oppose the wall? Because let me
right.
tell you something.
I'm
ever
against
since I've
walls,
come out
right.
against ripping children out of their parents' arms, I've had the intellectual decency and consistency to never lock the door in my building anymore.
It's pretty
right.
hypocritical.
Caused a lot of issues,
it's
actually.
It's pretty hypocritical Hannity uses doors, though.
That's true.
Right. Well, why does Hannity
let... How about walking on pathways,
but
frankly?
Why does Hannity
like to move different places?
But does Hannity let people in his house? Right? Like, no. I mean, whoa.
All of a sudden, we're just letting people in.
Whoa, wait a second. Hannity lets people in his house, right? Oh, but he won't let people in the country? What's that about?
Yeah.
What's going on, right? Like, so, is he never
breaking investigation alert on Fox News personalities. So he doesn't want people in the country, but he has a door to his house. Some people say hypocrisy. Other people say, well, he's just lying.
Hold on for one second. Does Hannity go to other countries? Has he ever been to other countries? Oh, but he's against other people from other countries coming here. What? Oh, what's that about? Well, that's weird.
I'm confused.
That's super weird. That's very strange. Hannity seems okay with him making $27 million. Why can't we all make $27 million, huh?
Now you get into the crux of it.
It's funny. He's got no problem with that. That's weird. That's super weird. That's really, really weird.
I'm sure you guys already talked about it, but how great was the point in the Bernie rally with the first break of Bernie, and he was like genuinely, he's like, no!
Yeah, right.
It's us!
We should compile those, actually.
Listen up.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sad I missed it.
It was adorable.
So Hannity thinks everybody should have freedom, right? How come he doesn't think everybody should have money? That's weird.
Yeah. Pretty bizarre.
That's so strange. That's weird. That's really hypocritical.
No, you have the freedom to starve to death. That's freedom.
Well, no, he's saying everybody gets freedom, but I'm saying why can't? Why does anybody
freedom have money?
Get money. That's really strange. We'll put the Majority Report I team on that.
More hypocrisy from the right.
Yes, unbelievable. They believe everybody should breathe, but not everybody should have free housing. That's weird. I wish it was that easy. And you know, because the awesome thing for Hannity is that his audience is like, that's right. That's true. And if we actually said stuff like that with a straight face, like our entire audience would just be like,
what the fuck are you doing?
Dude, we're gone. We're done with this. This is silly. Are you serious?
I actually get a bunch of concerned emails like, guys, this is a really serious time in our country.
Exactly. What's going on with you guys? You guys used to be really sound, and now it just seems like you're just finding these weird analogies. All right, we got to take a break, head into the fun half of the program, wherein we will have even more fun, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, if it's possible, we will have even more fun. You can support this program and join us in the fun half. We will break down the barriers. We did this already, didn't we, the other day? The wall thing. You can become a member for just literally pennies a day. I mean, more pennies than you'd want to carry on your pocket, in which case, you're welcome. We'll relieve you of those. You've just got to put them into digital form and send it to them or us. Or we could, I mean, if you really, never mind. Join themajorityreport.com. Join themajorityreport.com. You can support the first half of the show, and then we give you extra content every single day, ladies and gentlemen. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Check it out. We've gotten a couple of emails from people who are like, they were compelled by the story of the company, and then they were very, very happily surprised that the coffee's great. I have told you this for many years. Just Coffee. Great coffee, but even perhaps even more importantly, they are really great people and helpful to these farmers. So check them out, justcoffee.coop. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Today is Tuesday, which means that Michael has decided to come back to work. And of course, tonight is the Michael Brooks Show. Welcome back, Michael.
Thank you. I don't have anything to say to that. Tonight, that
what
is
can
correct.
You say? It's been,
that is correct.
When was the last Monday that you were in office, in this office?
Well, I think the better question is how many Mondays will I be in office?
Well, I think if past is prologue.
Past is prologue. Believe me. Tonight, Ben Burgess joins us. He's the author of the forthcoming book, Give Them an Argument, Logic for the Left. We're going to be talking about how the left can use logic. We're going to run some clinics, actually. We're going to use some clips from some of our favorite awful personalities on the right who sort of claim to embody logic, and we're going to run through some arguments. So I think everybody will be, and we'll also talk about Bertrand Russell and the socialist logic tradition and so on. So it would be interesting to everybody, but I would imagine, particularly if you have like an annoying roommate in college or something like that, or you want to get somebody away from falling down that rabbit hole. And then we've got a whole bunch of other stuff to cover, of course, 7 o'clock on the TMBS YouTube channel. Get the whole thing, including our series on Caribbean debt and coups and a forthcoming show on Puerto Rico, by going to patreon.com/TMBS. See you tonight at around 7-ish.
Oh, Jamie, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, so...
I'm just listening to the construction in the other office.
Oh, yeah, it's annoying. So this week, well, we actually released it last week, but it's still our current episode on the Antifada. I'm very, very excited about this one because we interviewed our sci-fi hero, Kim Stanley Robinson. He's won like every sci-fi award. He is a great utopian futurist. We talk about, focus on his Mars trilogy, but other books as well. We talk about space exploration, post-capitalist imaginaries, and psychedelic polyamory. Holy shit. And sitting in, because Andy is still in Mexico, we had Will Meneker, who's also a huge sci-fi nerd, helping us interview him. So check it out.
And Matt.
Up on the Literary Hangover YouTube channel, finally, is the Hans Fall episode. So Edgar Allan Poe fans get that. It's 3 hours long, so you get the full short story there. And Wakefield by Nathaniel Hawthorne. Check that out. That's the most recent podcast.
Okay, folks, quick break. Head into the fun half. See you there. Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous, you're a little bit upset, you're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude.
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 You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Some good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2. 5/8. 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd.
Don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance.
Ooh. Grandpa.
I had my first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you, you fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jabs.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good.
Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
I think I might be a Nazi.
Agreed.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands up.
Ooh.
But Sam, I got to get off.
No worries. Let's I want to just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me.
Hey, shut up.
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.